I don't know if you know this, but summertime is a time for summer camps, and Sweathead is going to run its third summer camp this July to August over 4 weeks. It's called the Sea Word Awakening from July 18 to August 10. We're going to focus on the four C's: consumer truth, cultural truth, competitive truth, and company truth. In the middle bit, the center bit, another C. And then we're going to give you a taste of comms planning as well. You're going to hear from Tassisopoulos from Wyden and Kennedy, Simone Pratt from Saatchi and Saatchi, Dylan Viner from Triptych, Jenny Chang, cultural strategist, Nick Susi from .. TBWA, Seth Gaffney from Preacher, Christina Pansaloni from Irico, Maria Van Busco from Media by Mother, Shane Rennie from Wyden and Kennedy, and me, Mark Pollard from Sweathead. For more details about how to join us in the Sweathead Strategy Summer Camp, go to sweathead.com. Your C-word awakening awaits. Well, what's up and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I have Mario Morbi, who's regional head of strategy at FP7 McCann over in Dubai. But that's not where you started, Mario. Let's start there. First of all, welcome. Good to be seeing you. Tell us where you started.
Yeah, good to see you too. Just to say thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to catching up with you. It's been a long time. I am originally from the sunny shores of Birmingham in the UK. I spent the early part of my career working a whole bunch of different independents. I've worked for a PR agency. I've worked for a B2B comms agency. And then the machine of McCann Birmingham started calling. And I joined those folks as a planner. And have spent now 11 years within McCann World Group. 5 years of those have been in the UK. And then I made the move back 5 years ago to come to Dubai.
I worked at McCann briefly in Sydney. It was two and a half years. And it was interesting. I felt like regionally, Australia and Asia with McCann, the network kind of worked. That was a pretty good connection there. I think in the UK, I'd imagine, because you got McCann up in Manchester, you got McCann in London, and then McCann Central, which is Birmingham, and a couple of other smaller offices there. I think all those offices have 400 or 500 people in them, right? How big's London, McCann?
So McCann London, I think, is around 200-300 headcount. Yeah, McCann Central, I think, in total with all the different agencies, is about 500. So it's pretty huge. So McCann Central is huge. It's huge. Yeah, it's huge.
They've got everything in house, so media and PR and events and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting, because what I've always thought was really unique about McCann Central was you had PR discipline, you had media discipline, you had digital, you had social, you had everything under one roof. And when I say media or PR, it's not like it was an in-house PR function. It was UN Media, who were literally just down the corridor. And so we had all these specialist functions, which made, I guess, planning easier, because there is someone just down the road that you can go and talk to.
So we should tell people what we're going to talk about today. So Mario and his crew at FP7 McCann have been listed on the Effie Index. They win a lot of awards there. That region's doing quite a lot of stuff. I feel like I need to visit it and see what's going on over there. What I want to do is really, it's part of this series where we talk to people in some of the world's most effective advertising agencies. Let's try to understand the culture, how they think, how they work, a bit of the process. We'll hear some about some of the work that the team's been doing as well. And we're also trying to connect all of this to like what's going on with strategists right now. So Sweathead, we published a report, What Strategists Want From Work. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. So Mario, FP7 McCann, I don't know a lot about it. What's the origin story?
So FP7 was set up 50s or 60s. It was one of the first agencies to set up in the region. And then about 15 years ago, half the business got bought by IPG, and so FP7 McCann. We are part of IPG and part of that wider group. FP7's got around 13 offices across the region, so we have regional coverage in places like Egypt, in Lebanon, Morocco, and Tunisia, and Saudi Arabia, which is a huge market. So as far as a network agency goes, we're one of the biggest over here in terms of that coverage, which I think is really interesting, because it means that we're able to get into all these different markets. It also means, from a strategic point of view, we've got a good, healthy community. We have about 13, 14 planners across the region, and being able to tap into someone from Saudi or someone from Egypt is really cool, because you get that perspective that I obviously wouldn't be able to get, A, because I'm British, and B, because I'm based in the UAE, and Dubai is a different place to Saudi, a very different place to Egypt. So we have a freshness of perspectives that are always coming through the network, which I think is really, really important when we want to get to some really good creative work.
And does FP7 McCann inherit all the strategy tools and philosophy from McCann? So truth well told, or is it different?
It's all the same. And I think actually that's one of the strengths of McCann World Group is actually how aligned we are to, I guess, that one shared view and that one shared philosophy. So that notion of truth well told runs through everything. So when I'm talking to, you know, some creatives in Saudi, it's the truth well told and the meaningful world that we're trying to create off the back of that truth well told. It's the same if I'm talking to people in Lebanon. So having that shared language and that common vernacular, again, is super useful, because when we want to connect to the rest of the network in the US or Europe, we're all singing from the same hymn sheet. So I think that's really powerful stuff.
Yeah. And the main strategy framework or strategic framework, is it 5 C's or 4 C's that you use?
It all comes off the philosophy of a meaningful role. So we believe that brands should play a meaningful role in people's lives. And to enable you to get to that meaningful role, you have the 6 C's framework. And your 6 C's effectively are but just spaces to look for truths. And the aim of that is you get to that truth well told, that killer insight, that observation, that thing that makes you go, okay, wow, like here is a way that we could crack this in, you know, perhaps a way that hasn't been done before.
Give me the C's. And also, I'm going to do a plug. We're doing a summer camp in July for members, focusing on the 4 C's over 4 weeks. So what are your 6 C's? You like a C word.
So we've got consumer, which is obviously all the audience stuff. We've got category, to explain that. You've got culture. You have companies. That's where we put the lens back on the brand itself. We have connections. So connections is the way that we all ultimately connect to brands and spaces. And then we have conscious inclusion. So what is that notion of inclusion that we can drive through the work that we are doing? And that was a C that was introduced over the past 12 to 18 months.
I was going to ask, that's a new C for McCann.
Yeah, and it's really interesting as well, because again, one of the challenges you get in the middle, conscious inclusion in the US or the UK or Europe has, you know, a very clear view. People very clearly know what it's about. And often it can be about gender identity or, you know, sexual identity or sexual orientation. In the Middle East, conscious inclusion means a very different thing. And it's a really interesting way to look at it, because you've got huge diversity and affluence. You've got a huge spectrum of wealth over here. You've got so many different religions. You've got so many different viewpoints. And that's where I think inclusion becomes equally powerful, but a completely different narrative than anywhere else.
Can you give us some specific examples so that I can understand that a little bit better?
Yeah, sure. So let's say Dubai, for example. You've got one of the spectrum, you know, insane levels of wealth, you know, huge incomes, people with God knows how many properties. We're a country where education is paid for, health is paid for. In the other spectrum, you've got people who don't make much money at all, who will make the equivalent of maybe $1,000 a month. And that $1,000 a month means possibly they're excluded from school. Maybe they can't get access to the same kind of healthcare. Maybe they can't get access to the same kind of education. So how do you make sure that those individuals are brought into that brand story? How do you make sure you make, you know, your brand accessible to those folks? You've also got that race point as well. 150 different nationalities represented in the UAE. That's people from all different parts of the world. So as a brand, what you can't afford to do is, you know, perhaps have that one single point of view when you're talking to Filipinos, you're talking to Indians, you're talking to people from the US, talking to Europeans. So how do you make sure everyone can feel included in that narrative and in whatever it is the brand's trying to achieve?
And then when it comes to filling in one of these frameworks, are we talking short phrases, a sentence, paragraph? How do the strategists usually approach filling in the framework?
I think often it just depends on the strategist's perspective. And one of the things I always try and push across to the community is to treat the tools like an operating system. They're not rules, they're guides for getting you to the best stimulus and getting you to the best insight. For some people, it is about being snappy. It is about verbatims that have been caught. It is about actually just sharing video footage they've captured. For others, it's about the detail analysis that goes into it, and it'll be detail-led and it'll be really quant heavy. And my view is, as long as you get to somewhere at the end of it, it makes sense of the problem and creatives understand it, then we're in a good spot.
How do you get a 6 C's quote-unquote right or wrong? Like, what are common mistakes, but also ways that people do it well?
So I think a common mistake is believing you have to fill every C out in this model. And often I think we become wedded to the fact that I have to go through everything. You know, I've got to find an insight around conscious inclusion. I've got to find something from category. And I think the beauty of it is looking at it and going, do you know where the hotbed is? It's in culture, it's in consumer, it's in connections. And I'm going to make the decision to cut the other C's out and focus on that. I think when you're able to do that, you get to a place that's much sharper. sharper. Sometimes we can overload it with information. You can overload it with all these facts and you go, okay, great, you've given me an indication of what the category is shaped like, but so what? Like, what are we going to do with it? And I think that can be one of the downsides, is you end up with 6C's encyclopedia of everything to do with this brand. And like, you're just like, okay, well, I'm not going to really get much out of that. Where it works well is when it's snappy. It's where you use it to keep asking yourselves a very different question. So rather than just what's the shape of the category, you know, what are the things that's happening in this space that are unusual, that are unfamiliar, that are, you know, haven't been discovered before. And really when you get to push yourself in that way, you know, it always leads to something that feels fresher.
Does the framework act as a brief as well, or do you have a creative brief template that it gets?
We have a separate brief. We have what we call the springboard brief, and that's where we'll take those core components. It's a pretty standard brief. Problem, audience. But where it's different is we've got the core truth, so our truth well told, and then we have the meaningful role. So what's the truth that we've discovered, and what's the role then that the brand needs to play? But sometimes that briefing can be the 6C's discovery. And I'm sure lots of folks are like this, but you know, I don't believe everyone should be using a briefing form if that problem doesn't require the briefing form. If the creative team don't respond to that kind of storytelling in the briefing session, then don't follow it. As long as you communicate those things that are important, doesn't really matter like the way you're housing it, as long as you give them something that makes them think, okay, well, I can go somewhere interesting with this.
How many people work at FP7 in the office that you're connected to?
About 130.
How many strategists?
We've got 5 strategists. So there's me, and then we've got a team of 4 strategists in the office.
And have you noticed many differences in the way that strategy happens where you are now compared to Birmingham?
Yeah, in some ways, not at all. In some ways, where we're really similar, it's things like trying to get a strategist to come out from behind the laptop and actually go out into the real world. It's like, dude, stop being a Google Planner. Go out and walk around and just immerse yourself. And I guess what's different over here, or what makes that challenging, is things like the heat. And this isn't a city where you walk around. You know, everything is delivered to you. So whereas you might just jump out of your office and pop down to your Sainsbury's and observe someone shopping, it's kind of a bit different over here. But still, you know, those things do happen. And I think planners, some in my team, people that I've interviewed and have met, were still reluctant to get out there. Maybe it's time, or maybe it's all the other stuff that comes in. So I think that's one of the challenges. The speed at which we have to do planning over here, it's so much quicker than back in the UK. And I remember when I got here and I was referring to a brief, it was a brand positioning brief for actually the example that I'll talk about when we get to that. And I think I'd kind of stroked my chin and said, you know what, I think we need about 3-4 weeks for this, for me to really get into the skin of the category and blah, blah, blah. And I never forget the client saying, look, we built a skyscraper in a year here and you want me to wait a month for you to come back with, you know, your views on the category. And I'm like, okay. Point taken. So we have to turn things around super quick. I think this notion of fast strategy is really important. I've kind of got used to this and developed this as a skill because it means I can rely on instincts more. Like, one of the things I've found in myself compared to the UK is the UK be really wedded to the data. I'm really wedded to what the research is, and I'm not prepared to form an opinion until I've got all that. Whereas here, because I have to work under insane time pressures, I'm relying on my instinct and I'm forcing myself to trust my own experiences to get to a point of view. And I think often as planners, we don't do that. We're a bit nervous to do that because we think it's a cheat code that's, you know, it's too much of a dodgy hack, don't do that. You know, it's inauthentic. But I think that's, for me, I found it super useful. Planners over here as well, and strategy over here is definitely more aligned with creative. So I think the strategists are more creative strategists, and their focus is about the work and making the work as creative as possible. And so what you don't have is a lot of the same kind of depth that you do in the UK. So big strategic decks with lots of data and lots of analysis, you don't see that as much. But I think maybe that's born out of different kinds of relationships. Clients here more reluctant to share data with you. So it's much harder to get things like commercial data and trading data. You can get your hands on stuff like Kantar and things like that and tracking studies, but the commercial data, that's not shared. So your role as a strategist almost has some boundaries around it. You can focus on the creative, but when you start getting some of that bigger upstream business stuff, it's harder because the relationships aren't there. So those are just some of the ways I think it's different.
What about dynamics with the creative teams?
Yeah, they're the same. It's really interesting because I was expecting, or maybe I didn't know what I was expecting, but perhaps I thought it would be slightly different. But, you know, creative spirits are creative spirits. And if you go in with a brief that isn't interesting and doesn't have a point of view and doesn't tell them something different, they just, like, lose their shit with it. They're not interested. They don't want to know. They'll kick you out of the room. If you go in there and make an effort with some good stuff, then you've got their attention. And so I think that is very much the same.
Smart person. Hey, pull your mind out of those timesheets for a second and take a look at the Sweathead website. We have three membership levels, Starter Mode, Flight Mode, and Beast Mode. They give you access to a variety of strategy masterclasses, conferences, accelerators, and online learning, some of which has been known to make people cry because they like it, they like it, they feel seen. Make the most of your mind this year or any year and visit www.sweathead.com today. Now back to the interview. So what do you put the success of FP7 down to? What's happening in the culture? You've talked us through a little bit about that, some of the behaviors, the frameworks. What's going on there that has led to so many awards in recent years, including being on the FE Index?
I think that that is a culture that is part of the region. So the value of awards here is much higher than, you know, in any of the places that I've experienced. And they are valued by agencies, they're valued by clients, and they are expected. And so there's a prerequisite in everything that we're doing. We have to have one eye on awards. We have to have one eye on effectiveness. We have to have one eye doing stuff that creatively and strategically is going to pick up something, you know, one of the award show. And so every time we pick up a brief, because that our default position is, can it lead to somewhere that's award winning? We push it from the start. We push the client brief from the start. We push the creative all the way through because that's the expectation. And I think so culturally, it's a long way around of me saying we don't settle. Like, I don't see that settling behavior. I don't see that. I don't see clients or strategists or creatives accepting that first idea. You know, it's always about pushing it and taking as far as it possibly can because the expectation is to win something. I also think with awards as well, the difference, say, perhaps with my UK experiences and over here, is everyone is aligned to that. Like, that agenda is so central to the agency's success that from CEO down to production to art, which everyone knows that it's part of our objectives. And so everyone's aligned, everyone works together to do it. Sometimes I find in the UK, particularly think about strategic awards, is it the strategists do that. And, you know, we're screaming for help and trying to get creatives on board to do the edits. And, you know, perhaps it won't have as much as priority. But here it's a big deal.
Have you noticed any differences with the client attitudes towards the work you do? Any dynamics with clients different?
It goes back to that point about being creatively driven. What clients are looking for here are those big, impactful creative ideas that can work across different cultures. Because bear in mind as well, most of the clients will be trading in Saudi, and that'll be a huge part of their market. It's a 35 million market, so that's a key market. But then they'll also be in Egypt, and they'll also be in Lebanon. So they're looking for those ideas that have got that universal cultural truth and allow them to come to life in really interesting ways in all those different spaces. And there's lots of nuances there when it comes to the language. There's lots of nuances there when it comes to the culture. But creativity is really valued. And so ideas that are super funny or ideas that are kind of edgy, like, that's what they're looking for. And so when I'm presenting strategy, I find that the challenges on strategy are a lot lower than the challenges on creative. So with strategies like get it or no, I don't, when we get to creative, there are detailed conversations around and that we really get into it at that point. And, you know, it's been 5 years since I've been working in the UK, but I always felt like in the UK, there was that equal balance between really interrogating the strategy, pausing, being clear about it, and then getting into the creative. Here it's right, let's get to the strategy. I get it. Great job. Now we're going to go into the creative.
Very cool, very cool. Can you take us through a couple of pieces of work?
Yeah, so there's a really interesting one that we did. It was one of the first projects I got involved in. So it's a couple of years old, but it was for a Saudi tel called Jawi. So it's a SIM-only mobile company. And when I got here and I met with them, they spoke about how the brand had launched pretty well, been quite successful. It was trading on value, trading on the fact that, you know, you get a whole bunch of minutes, a whole bunch of data. And it's a great deal. But sales and activations of SIMs kind of stagnated. We're like, okay, what do we do about this? You know, how can we take this into a different place? And one of the things that was really interesting is for this particular brand, it wasn't actually the amount of minutes or the amount of data that you got. It was the T's and C's behind it. So three, 4 years ago, here was a brand that was saying, if you didn't use all your minutes and data, you could get the money back at the end of the month. You could share your plan with a bunch of different people. It was super flexible. So like, okay, like most people hate telcos because they are just these rigid, unfair contracts that tie you in. You know, here is a telco that is kind of got fairness baked into it. So we came up with this positioning of Joey makes life fairer. And we used that as this anchor point for all the creative. So we relaunched it and did some great work for them. And we did this thing called the Fair Factory. And that won an Effie's. And then we went on to something else, which I thought was really interesting, was Ramadan is the Super Bowl of the Middle East. You know, it's where a huge amount of spend takes place. Everyone's watching TV because they're relaxing after fasting and they just want to chill out. And so Joey again says, well, we've got a limited budget. Absolutely need to stand out during Ramadan. How do we do that? What should we do? What's our point of view? And I was like, you know what? Why are we trying to fight with everyone at this time when everyone's fighting with each other? Why don't we just kind of do a Ramadan campaign after Ramadan? The whole philosophy of Ramadan was about being more charitable, about acknowledging the goodness in everyone. And, you know, it's all about doing good deeds. I'm like, that's great. What do we carry on doing that after Ramadan? It's kind of a bit like Christmas. You know, everyone's great at Christmas, but come January 1st, we're all a bit grumpy and, you know, we've all forgotten what that Christmas spirit is. So we said to the client, I know, we've got this brilliant idea. We're going to do the world's first Ramadan campaign when Ramadan's finished, and we'll launch it the first day. And it took a bit of selling and took a bit of persuasion, but they bought it and we ran it. You know, it was incredibly successful for them, incredibly effective in terms of all that usual stuff, the brand stuff, the equity, but also in terms of setting plans for them. And that campaign got us about 5 Effies, a couple of Walk Global, some Amy's. So it was a really hugely successful piece of work for them. And in fact, Jerry consistently, using that same framework, picked up awards every year. And it goes back to that story, you know, that notion of making life fairer for a telco. There's something inherently interesting in that, something inherently fresh in it. You know, that's what enabled us to produce some award-winning work.
How long do you think you and the team would spend getting an Effie together, an entry?
In terms of putting a paper together? It takes about 4 days. So we work in such a rapid pace compared to anywhere else that it takes around 4 days to get everything together, get the data together, crack out the paper, write your script, and get that out. And so we are working a lot quicker. We're not dwelling on things as much. And I think that helps with the volume and being able to, you know, approach Effie's with, you know, what, not one or two campaigns, but 10 to 15 campaigns.
Right, and clients will share data for an Effie entry?
Yeah, so for an Effie entry, we can get that data. And often, because they will do a campaign wash-up and they'll do a campaign report, and often for that very specific example, we can get the data that we need to build out that story and to build out that case.
What do you think are some of the advantages or benefits of being a company or a team that enters the Effies?
The first one, I'm going to say, is new business. Clients approach us because they want to work with us because we are, you know, one of the world's most effective agencies. And so we're not an agency that has to cold call. We're not an agency that has to chase business. We're an agency that is receiving calls and receiving interest from clients that want to work with us. I think it helps raise the standard of strategy and creativity because that's the benchmark and we have to maintain that and we have to deliver against that. So, you know, it forces people to always raise their game. And then I think on some of the softer stuff, you know, it galvanizes the culture, galvanizes the team when everyone gets to win. You know, everyone feels great about it. And it's a great boost. It's a great reward for the hard work that's gone before it.
And what's your relationship like with the chief creative officer?
Very good. Very good. So we've, I always laugh when people ask about relationship with creative because it's like the best of enemies, right? The worst of friends, best of enemies. And Fede is our CCO. What I actually really appreciate with Fede at the moment is we find quite a lot of the work over here will lean into purpose. It leans into the kind of stuff that, you know, is purpose-driven and community-driven and societal. And what we're doing and what Fede is doing at the moment is some of the good old-fashioned work that is about entertainment, that is about, you know, focusing on the selling stuff. We're not solving a societal problem. We're just framing products in a really interesting way and doing it in a fun way and in an entertaining way. Just being a bit silly about stuff. And often brands aren't very silly with things. And so Fede is a really good advocate around that. And working with him is good as well. He's also one that challenges the strategy. I think it's incredibly important. So we have a really good, confident, and very, you know, switched on strategic department. And that can be intimidating for some creatives. It can be easy for a creative to go, okay, this brief must be right. But, you know, it's come from strategy, but we're not going to challenge it. I think Fede is really good in keeping us grounded and saying, actually, no, is this the best thing that you can do? Really? Is that fresh? Is that original? I don't know. Looks like you've just pulled that one out now. So I think that's really important for good work.
So it is interesting hearing the language, the questions that leaders use when they're discussing work. So I just heard the question, is it fresh? Is it original? Are they questions that are pretty common in those interactions? Are there other questions?
It always comes down to, are we enabling our creative colleagues to take us somewhere fresh, to take the brand and take the work into a different direction that hasn't been done before? And so the question will always be, this audience that you've identified, who exactly are they? What's going on in their lives? Like, culturally, what's the stuff that's going on there? Like, where's that interesting stuff that's happening at a societal level that we can, you know, embellish the work with and embellish the brief with? You know, like many creatives around the world, when you start using like nonsense jargon, when you start referring to things like demographics and consumers and blah, blah, you know, that stuff, that just turns them off. You know, they're not interested in that. And why I think that's also super important for us is because we've got creatives from India, we've got creatives from Lebanon, we've got creatives from Italy, we've got creatives from England. And so we have to keep our briefs quite human, because that jargon doesn't travel well. Not everyone uses the same kind of language, everyone uses the same kind of words. And so we have to cut through that with a brief that's super clear, anyone can understand. And when you've got 100 different, you know, nationalities in the agency, that's a challenge.
What about when it comes to the ideas of the creative teams? Are there certain questions that get asked of them? Is there a creative philosophy above and beyond Truth Well Told? But, you know, because CCOs, sometimes they have styles of ideas that they like. Do you have a sense of what kinds of ideas your CCO is attracted to?
So I would say it is the stuff that leans into the fun side of work. So is this entertaining? You know, does it entertain in some way? And not entertain as in, you know, is it schmaltzy and will it cause someone to shed a tear? Is it entertaining in a way that you kind of see the work that comes out of during Super Bowl? Like, I think a lot of the stuff during Super Bowl is kind of fun. It's irreverent. You know, there's innuendo in there. There's comedy in there. Certainly over the past year, that's what we're seeing. More work, you know, more irreverent. It's comedic. Like, we did something with Heinz recently. So Heinz weren't a sponsor of the World Cup, but they wanted to be there. They didn't really have any money. And they were like, right, what can we do? So we effectively figured out a way you could do it. Like, how do you get Heinz into the World Cup? You find someone called Heinz from Germany and you send them over to the World Cup with a t-shirt that says, my name is Heinz. And that t-shirt is branded using the assets of the Heinz logo. You send them around the World Cup with a camera for 3 days, three matches, and get them to create content for you, which is what we did. And that campaign has just picked up a bunch of awards at, I think, Clio's, I think The One Show, Lynx, which is Cannes' version of Dubai's version of Cannes. So it's doing really, really well. But it was really fun. It's really intense. It's cheeky. And that's the kind of work that we're producing.
Let's talk about briefing. Can you give me some examples of infamous FP7 briefings?
For us, the briefing process or the actual briefing is super important, you know, and I think that one of the things our creative are, the kind of red flag is, do not come in with a form. Do not read off this form. Do not put your head down and read through this and expect us to be inspired by it. You know, it is play footage. It is show us something, play us a song. Like, where's that YouTube clip? Like, that's what the brief is about. And we worked on a recent project for MasterCard. So similar to Heinz, MasterCard got a huge sponsorship with Champions League, but they can't talk about football during the World Cup. And so we're like, how do we do something? You know, what can we do to give them a bit of talkability before they have to shut down any talk around football? And we set up this community. We asked a whole bunch of football fans around the world all sorts of different things. And we were just playing these voice clips. And you know what fans are like when, especially football fans, they're passionate. And so what started off as just sending your comments through WhatsApp and just talk through the community ended up as being all these voice notes and pretty much banter from different fans around the world. And when you play that, when we play it to the creative team, you could just see them thinking of the work already. You could see them imagining the work off the back of that. There wasn't any brief around that. It was, listen to what the fans are talking about. Listen to some of the stuff. Listen to some of the lingo. Listen to some of the expressions that they're using. And that really helped inspire the work that we did, which happened to be the first football match held in zero gravity.
Can you give me another infamous briefing story?
So I'd probably say Jawi again with the Ramadan campaign. So for all the reasons I'd spoken about, you know, culturally committed with the Ramadan campaign, outside Ramadan wasn't the thing that had been done. And you know, so we're going to the briefing session, I'd already articulated obviously the strategy and the viewpoint. And we kind of avoided the brief and just said, right, we're going to do a campaign that celebrates Ramadan, but you can't mention it during Ramadan. We're not going to talk about it during Ramadan. And you've got a bunch of creatives going, hang on a minute, culturally, what are we doing here? You know, is this even the right thing to do? And it was like a proper needle being scratched over the record vibes, like that scene in American Werewolf in London when they walk into the pub and everyone's like, stops and drops their drink. And that was interesting because I think that was the first side or the first opportunity for them on this brand to go, hang on, we can do something that's different here. We can do something that just doesn't follow the conventions.
I mean, you're regional head of strategy, winning all these awards. How are you looking at your own career right now?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, for me, you know, regional head of strategy is the FP7 McCann's version of a CSO. You know, where do I go from here? What would be interesting in the future is working in a different country. I think once you've traveled once and you move to a different country, you get a bit of a bug. It's brilliant. And I've loved that. And I've loved being immersed in something that's completely different. I'd love to try that again. At one point, I thought maybe we'll try America. But then I've read so many of your postings. I'm like, no, I don't think I could do that. I'm going to pass upon that. It's probably going to be maybe back into mainland Europe. But I would say the strategy side, I've never had any interest in, you know, leading an agency or doing anything like that. Often I think about it'd be great to break free and work on your own and do something for yourself, but I need people around me. I don't know, I just couldn't do it without that.
Mario, if people want to find you on the internet, where are you most active?
LinkedIn, that's the place to find me.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, it's been awesome to catch up with you. We met each other 7-ish years ago in Birmingham, which was fun. And, you know, you've had a brilliant career since. I've just been, you know, doing social posts.
There are times of the day, mate, when I'm envious. It's been good catching up with you. Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's awesome because, you know, I look at the way that your career's happened and I think a lot of people would be envious of that and be like, yeah, I wish I could just get into a place, maybe into a new city, into a new country, and just have a few good years, do some award-winning work. And not just for the awards, but award-winning work is often quite stimulating to do.
Yeah.
Get that big title. And then, you know, I've made it. I've made it. So it's interesting and lovely to see your trajectory there. And I hope it continues.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been good catching up with you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me here on Sweathead today. Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. Subscribe to our newsletter. Find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy memberships, company training, or book, at sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.